Hi, this is Elizabeth Doherty. You're listening to Food Nation Radio Network. We have Anthony Bourdain on the phone. I'm so glad to have you on the show.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to ask you about this whole attitude about elitism in food, because people think I'm sort of elitist about food, but I think compared to the people I've met, like Alice Waters and some of the other people, I don't think I'm such an elitist. But have you noticed that?
Well, I think it's a symptom that is easy to creep up on you. I mean, people feel very strongly about food. You know,
Right. We
tend to take it very personally. You know, our mom's meatloaf is the best. You know, everybody's mom's is.
Yeah.
We cling fiercely to our likes, dislikes, our prejudices, the things we feel we've learned, our favorite restaurants. Add to that this, you know, sort of new tidal wave of rampant foodieism, and you're going to get a lot of people who, knowingly or not, are basically using their knowledge or experience of food as an aggressive act rather than what it was intended as. You know, food's supposed to bring people together, you know.
Right.
It's supposed to be about sitting down with friends and having a good time.
Well, we
seem to have kind of come from undervaluing food to overvaluing and fetishizing it to the point of craziness.
I completely agree with you. And one of the things I like about you is that you keep it pretty real.
Oh, I try. I'm guilty of it, too. I mean, I make food porn for a living, and I also have, you know, there's certain things where that I do get sort of, you know, crazy about, obviously. I mean, I'm somebody who yells at the television a lot.
Well, you seem to calm down on the whole Rachel Ray thing.
Yeah, I'm you know, Rachel Ray, there's so many worse offenders out there, and, you know, I mean,
right.
I try not to, you know, I try to sort of calm down on the Food Network thing, but it's hard.
Well, I have a hard time. I'll be honest with you. I have a hard time watching Food Network now for a couple of reasons. One is the way they take maybe like the egg board, for instance, and they do all these little recipe segments with the egg board. And
yeah.
And you know that's what it is. You know it's not about, you know, some recipe that, you know, mom had 50 years
ago.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, 5-10 exciting new things to do with government cheese. You know?
Right, exactly. That's one of the things that bothers me about Food Network. And when I interviewed Julia Child years ago, I was at her 90th birthday party. That's one of the things she said was the commercialization of food through Food Network was really disturbing to her. She didn't like it.
She never endorsed anything in her entire life. She never endorsed anything.
That was the other thing she said. She said she didn't want to endorse anything. She didn't need to endorse anything, and she wasn't going to do it.
On the other hand, you know, if you look, I mean, play devil's advocate, you got a lot of people out there who worked, like Emeril, who worked hard his whole life.
Right.
Started sweeping floors in a bakery in Fall River, Massachusetts. Worked his way up through the restaurant business, you know, was a real chef, runs real businesses. You know, I'm fine. I mean, I like his shows, but I'm fine with him becoming, you know, an empire. I mean, even
right.
I think who deserves, you know, money, stardom, and you know, some financial security more than chefs who never traditionally had those things. I think it's a good thing that we care as a culture. We care what chefs think these days. I think that's been good for us as a culture. I think it's certainly been good for chefs.
Right.
You know, I think, you know, who better, you know, reality stars or chefs, you know, to idolize. But of course, you know, in order to, you know, with that, you know, with the fact that we're eating better now in America than we ever have.
True.
Or more likely to when we walk into restaurants, with that comes a lot of really sub-moronic and painful stuff. You know, hopefully we, as a public, we get smarter over time and can make choices. I mean, that's the best I could hope for.
Well, do you think you're crossing the line when you do a game show?
I mean, in what way? I mean, if you're talking about Guy Fieri.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm talking about Guy Fieri.
Was he ever a chef? I mean, these people have SAG cards before they're, you know, before they know how to cook.
Yeah, know? I know.
I mean, I think he's this thing, you know, does anyone let, no, not Guy. How could you betray us? You know, you really let the team, what team? I mean,
there's no team. I couldn't watch it. And I walked by and I was like, Why?
I know. Well, I've spent spectacular amounts of money. It's, of course, the answer.
I guess.
Of course. But I mean, to me, you know, I don't care how much you pay me. You know, Howie Mandel is not a role model for me. You know what I mean? You know, if I woke up one day, looked in the mirror, and saw Howie Mandel, I don't care how much he was getting paid, I'd hang myself in the shower. You know?
I might help you.
I'd wait a week.
I know. I know. Well, I want to talk about your book for a second. I read your new book, and we talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago, the Ortolan. And that's something that I read about probably about 10 years ago was the Ortolan thing. Really? Was it really that good?
It's delicious.
Really?
It is really delicious. I mean, it's a, you know, as a once in a lifetime or twice in a lifetime thing, you know, I think it's, you know, I really enjoyed it. No, it's not something I'm going to go out looking for. You know, there's some, you know, moral issues there. I'm glad I tried it. I'm not encouraging other people to try it. I mean, most people would not know, never have access to it in their lives. But, you know, given the opportunity, it was something that I was very excited about and thought was delicious.
Did you hear from PETA?
No. You know, what? They're going for easier issues, you know. They're really not.
That's a pretty extreme one. But
I mean, listen, I think it's better. I mean, you know, someone asked Alice Waters in my presence, you know, what her death row meal would be. And her answer was shark fin soup. So
shark fin soup. Know. Really?
Can you believe that, Alice Waters?
I know. That's kind of surprising. You know,
I don't order shark fin soup, okay?
No.
You know, my feeling is it's bland tasting.
It doesn't have a lot of attraction for me.
It's you know, it's an awful lot of pain and misery and unsustainability and destruction in return for very few gains. So I avoid.
Yeah. I'm not feeling the love for that at all.
No,
really. But I saw an interview with you. It was a television interview that I saw on the internet with you and somebody else, and Alice Waters was sitting in the middle of the two of you.
Yeah, it was me, Duff Goldman from
Duff. AK, yeah,
was at that event. She gave the shark fin soup answer.
Well, the thing I remember about that appearance was that you all had a little moment there, you and Duff, where you almost went to that place with Alice Waters about the sewage thing with the utility people. I think you're almost going to go there. Were you almost going to go there?
It's very hard to go at her, you know. I studied up, you know, ready to really go at her hammer and tongs.
Right.
But she comes at you, grasps them. She's very disarming, very shrewd.
Yes.
You know, this, you know, spacey lady with a battle armful of vegetables comes at you with a beatific smile.
Saying, I know.
Oh, how are you? And, you know, mentioning friends in common. It's really hard to pull the trigger. And I mean, you know, she's not a bad person. She does.
No.
You know, I agree with just about everything she professes to believe in. I just think that she's a bad spokesperson for her own cause. And I sort of like, I like the greedy, sensualist, francophile Alice, you know. I
mean, right.
Alice, I know she'd be a lot of fun, you know, have dinner with at you know, Lou Perrault's place or Mimi Perrault's place.
Yeah.
In France or Provence. I mean, you know, that's the real Alice, you know, drinking big wines in Provence. Right?
I think we need to put Alice in a little French maid outfit and she'd be completely different.
Totally. You know, it's worth remembering she did create the cradle of the revolution.
That's true.
In her house. You know, it's very, you know, every time she opens her mouth, she used to put her foot in.
She was at Julia Child's 90th birthday party, and I met her there. And I have to tell you, she wasn't all that warm. I wasn't feeling the warmth there.
So yeah, I remember recently she was given an opportunity. You know, they were talking about, you know, sort of guilty pleasure. Junk food, fast food, and are any of them any good? And they finally gave her, you know, sort of a chance to show that she in some way can interact with or understand or relate to, you know, working people on a budget. They said, well, what about In-N-Out Burger? Which even Thomas Keller loves In-N-Out Burger.
Everybody loves In-N-Out Burger.
Sustainable, fair,
yeah,
good organization to work for. It's a decent product.
Yeah.
So she says, her answer, no, I'd much rather eat like street food in Greece. And it's like, well, who wouldn't? You know?
I think she owns 15 cats. She seems like a cat person to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like you said, I do agree with a lot of her methodology. And I recently got into a little argument with a local grocery store that is pretty big in Florida about GMO foods and stuff. I mean, what do you think about this whole GMO thing? Do you care? at all?
I do. I would like my food supply to be safe and responsible and not destructive to small farmers and all the rest. But I mean, I look at GMO. I mean, we've been genetically modifying animals and crops since the minute we colonized America, since we arrived in America from Western Europe.
If you look at it that way, yeah.
I mean, we've been, nothing is natural. I mean, the country didn't look like this. We've been crossbreeding and genetically modifying since the beginning.
Right.
I look at it like just nuclear power. It's the technology is there. You may not like the sound of nuclear power. It may be capable of being incredibly destructive, but I'm not going to be against it in principle. I'm going to be extraordinarily cautious with a very, very high threshold for you better show me that this is going to work safely.
Right.
If you tell me you can create, giant super tomatoes that are going to feed India through genetically modified products someday.
Right.
You can do it safely. I mean, I'm certainly not opposed to that in a knee-jerk way.
In principle.
But given the track record, a lot of these companies who are dealing in this stuff, we certainly have no reason to believe that they will be responsible.
Well, another thing I wanted to ask you about is, in other countries, people have different cultural standards for the things that they eat. And a friend of mine lived in Korea for a while, and I'm a pet lover, but they eat things that we wouldn't normally eat.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I think it's an arbitrary line. We as Americans, and this is true of me as well, I drive past the dog restaurant, I've seen them in Asia, I've been offered, and I drive past.
Yeah.
I choose, because I have chosen two arbitrary animals that I'm just not going to eat if I can avoid it at all. The pig is smarter, pig is probably even nicer, but we choose to eat him. So I understand the hypocrisy of the argument. I mean, it's actually a good one that PETA makes. Would you eat a human? Would you eat a dog? Well,
right.
Under certain circumstances, I would. I understand it's an arbitrary line, but it is my line just the same, and I would prefer not to cross it. I don't look down on cultures that do it, however uncomfortable it might make me feel.
Yeah.
And I like to think that given a choice between offending my host if surprised with his dog, by a poor family someplace, I like to think I would rather violate my own deeply held principles than offend my host given that choice. But I also work very hard to avoid having to make that choice.
Well, my cousin Rick O'Berry did the Cove movie with the dolphins,
Yeah.
And he went to the Solomon Islands and Taiji to stop people from eating dolphin.
Yeah.
And to him, it's a moral choice. To me, it's more of a health choice because they're extremely high in mercury. It's one of the worst animals you can eat. But for him, it was kind of a moral thing. And he does this thing and he's doing a great job. I mean, he's stopped people from eating dolphin in Japan.
Well, that's I heard about the movie. I heard it's very, very, profoundly effective.
Early on, I've read most of your books. And early on, I think people really underestimated you a lot. Because when you started writing, basically you were a chef.
Mm-hmm.
In a restaurant.
Yep.
And I had the impression that you were kind of languishing through life.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And then you sort of just came out of the box and let people know who you really were. And I think that's great.
I got a lucky break. And, the plan is now to do my utmost to not screw up.
Well, I think you're doing a good job. And I really appreciate you calling in.
My pleasure.